Congratulations on choosing Perimeter. This is a very unusual place. There is nowhere like this in the world, and there probably has never been. In the following sense, we have been given an amazing opportunity here. We have wonderful support from private donors, from the government, and they've given us a great deal of freedom. They believe in our field. They believe that the discoveries made in theoretical physics are really important for humanity. And this is certainly true if you look at the past. Why does the electricity in the building work? Why does the plumbing work? Why do the automobiles drive along the roads? Why do your cell phones work? All of that is based on the discoveries made sometimes hundreds of years ago in theoretical physics. Without those discoveries, we wouldn't have modern technology, we wouldn't have the vast array of sciences that we have today. Most of these sciences, if you trace back their basic discoveries, if you trace it back far enough, you will find the roots are in discoveries made in physics. We know the world is made of atoms. Who found that out? Physicists. We know how the atoms stick together into molecules. Who discovered that? Again and again, you will find it's physicists, not just theorists, but experimentalists. But experimentalists exploring theoretical ideas. Most recently, we have two spectacular examples. The Large Hadron Collider last year discovered the Higgs boson. That was predicted 50 years earlier by Higgs and others on the basis of quantum theory, relativity, particle physics. It's a particle a billion times smaller than the atom, and yet it was anticipated that it should be there. And then a 10 billion euro machine was built and found the Higgs boson exactly where it was supposed to be. What is going on? Why is it that human beings have this capacity to see into the heart of nature way beyond the world of everyday experience? We don't know. We have no idea. But we do know that it's profoundly important. The second great discovery was the, who can tell me, confirmed this year, let's say. The Higgs was on the tiniest scale. What experiment was done on the very largest scale imaginable this year? Planck satellite, that's right. And the Planck satellite measured the pattern of density variations and temperature variations coming out of the Big Bang. And if you saw the experimental curves, they line up beautifully, very, very precisely. And there are a few unknowns still, but the level of agreement between theory and data is extraordinary and not matched in any other area of science. Yet what we're describing is the whole universe itself. And the whole universe turns out to be surprisingly simple. Universe is very simple on the tiniest scales, described by the standard model of particle physics. And on the very largest scale, it also turns out to be very simple, described by Einstein's equations, with some unknowns like the dark matter and the dark energy. But the level of precision is beyond any other field of science. And the reach is beyond any other field of science. Now, that's the good news about physics, that it is the most successful field in science. It is the most ridiculously simple at heart, complicated in the calculations, of course, but simple conceptually of any field, simpler conceptually than any other field. But theoretical physics is at a crossroads right now. In a sense, we've entered a very deep crisis. The crisis comes about because for the last 30 years, people have been building models in physics. You may have heard of some of these models. There have been grand unified models, there have been supersymmetric models, super string models, loop quantum gravity models, models. Okay? Well, nature turns out to be simpler than all of these models. Okay? The Large Hadron Collider switched on and discovered the Higgs boson. And all the theorists were very excited, and they were waiting for supersymmetry, and this particle, and that particle, and the other particle. And what happened? They weren't there. And so I was at CERN at the time. And people were walking around. Experimentalists were very happy. Theorists were very sad. And they still are. If you ask most theorists working on particle physics, they're in a state of confusion. What is going on? We expected all these other things. And people had arguments why they had to be there and they're not there. And so, to a large extent, the theories have failed. That's my personal point of view. And the reason they have failed, in my view, is that they didn't really introduce new enough concepts. They were building on concepts, developed the same concepts used to suggest the Higgs particle. The Standard Model is built on a certain set of concepts. They're wonderful, very tight, very principled set of concepts. And those concepts eventually, they're part of the prediction of the Higgs boson. The mathematical consistency of the Standard Model is an extraordinary thing. It's a very tight framework. But the extensions of the Standard Model, like grand unified theories, they were supposed to simplify it. But in fact, they made it more complicated. Number of parameters in the Standard Model is about 18. The number in grand unified theories is typically 100. The number in supersymmetric theories typically 100. The minimum is 120, and it explodes from there into thousands. And as you may have heard, string theory seems to predict 10 to the power 1,000. Okay, different possible laws of physics. This is called the multiverse. It's the ultimate catastrophe. Okay, that. Theoretical physics, this chain of theories which was invented, has led to this crazy situation where the theorists are utterly confused and seem not to have any definite predictions at all. And so there's this crisis. It's the same with cosmology. There's the discovery of recent years. One of the most striking discoveries is that the vacuum, empty space, is not empty. Well, first of all, it's full of the Higgs field. Okay, the Higgs field is like the medium, the sea, the ocean, and the Higgs particle is like the ripple or the sound wave traveling through that ocean. So we know the vacuum is full of Higgs field. Large Hadron Collider has confirmed that. We also know the vacuum has energy. That's what cosmology has discovered. That the vacuum has a small but very definite positive vacuum energy. And it gets even more exciting because if you take the Large Hadron Collider data and you extrapolate and you say, what would the energy in the vacuum be if the Higgs field was larger? Okay, the Higgs field wants to be at a certain value because that minimizes the energy in the vacuum. But if it was, well, it's a local minimum. If you make the Higgs field larger, theoretically, which you can do, you can explore the vacuum energy as a function of the Higgs field. What you discover is that our vacuum is not the lowest energy vacuum. There's another one that's even lower. And so we live in a metastable vacuum. Our vacuum is only just, it's temporarily stable. We could tunnel out of our vacuum into a lower energy vacuum with a huge release of energy. And so again, something strange is going on. We don't quite know how to piece these things together. And I personally would say there really is a fundamental crisis in theory. Theory has kind of, in my view, the lines of inquiry which have been pursued have sort of self-destructed. Now, this is rather similar to what happened in the beginning of the 20th century. As you know, beginning of the 20th century, classical mechanics and classical electromagnetism were found to be in contradiction with each other and with the theory of heat. There were deep paradoxes within the classical picture of the world. And those paradoxes caused a crisis. They caused people to realize that as successful as it was, the physics they knew was inconsistent. Inconsistent with itself, inconsistent with reality, and that led to radical new ideas. So that's how relativity emerged in reconciling classical mechanics and electromagnetism, which predicts a definite speed, the speed of light. That's inconsistent with Galilean relativity and mechanics. And electromagnetism was inconsistent with the theory of heat. Just too many modes. You can have waves of arbitrarily short wavelength. And if you don't do anything, they will suck up all the heat and just cool off anything instantly. And that's not what happens in the real world. And that contradiction led to the invention of quantum mechanics. So these crises in physics have been incredibly fruitful in the past. That's how we discover new principles. That's how physics is transformed to a more complete, more unified, more powerful theory. And my strong sense is that we are entering the same phase today, that the theories we know are missing some very important principle. And that makes the field even more exciting. You're not in any sense even though this field is thousands of years old, you're not entering a field which is established. Okay? You are entering a field which requires a complete reinvention. Okay, so many of us have ideas what that reinvention should involve. And you will find perimeter probably the place in the world where there are more of these ideas than anywhere else. Okay, so you will find lots of people, each one trying to pursue some idea as to what kind of principle will replace relativity, quantum theory, fundamental laws of physics. So this can be quite confusing for you, because you will be taking courses from people who, each one of whom will try and persuade you that this is the way and the light. You need to be skeptical. You need to develop your own ideas. But what I wanted to kind of say to you, each one of you, is the PSI program is really something special. Globally. Okay, there isn't a program like this. You will be very, very well treated on this program. Okay, you have fantastic tutors looking after you. You have great food, which I see you are enjoying. But I encourage you to come earlier to have your food. And so you are very privileged in this place. And what I ask of you in return is that you need to be good citizens. You are, as the youngest members of this community, and we have a very young member among you, Jacob, as the youngest members of this community, you actually play a very, very important role. You know, when I walk in, when any of the older faculty walk in, and they see you guys sitting in the bistro, it gives us a lift. Okay? Why? Because you guys are good at having fun. Okay? You got a sense of humor. I mean, all of us are old. And, you know, so you bring the buzz, okay? And the energy and the fun and you're the future. Okay? So we all see like this. And so it's up to you to have a good time here. Okay, and you're the leaders of that in this institute, and we really want to see you having a good time. But there are two ways to have a good time, many ways to have a good time. But you can study like crazy, okay? And you might feel you have to do that, okay? After all, it's a very competitive program. You've got all your careers to worry about, blah, blah, blah. There are infinite number of reasons to work yourselves to death. Okay, don't. Okay, don't. The most precious thing you have is your enthusiasm. Okay, never forget that. You've got to protect it very, very carefully. Without your enthusiasm, you got nothing. Okay, so look after yourself. Study the things you want to study. Okay, you're all great students. You've all achieved wonderful things. You don't have anything to prove here. Okay, so do what you want to do. Let your enthusiasm, let your passion motivate you. Okay, and protect it. Okay, don't feel forced to do anything. Okay. Obviously, if you're sleeping all day, I may come and have a talk to you and say, there are more comfortable places to sleep. But look after yourselves. Look after your enthusiasm. It's the most valuable thing you have, and protect it fiercely. Okay. The other thing I want to say is, so many opportunities here. You know, in a way, the courses are the least of it, right? The courses are, you're going to do many courses. Maybe typically you do 20 courses through the year. Okay, this is a huge load of work. I mean, we exceed the requirements. University of Waterloo has certain requirements for a master's. I think we exceed them by a factor of 3. Not quite. Less than what? Well, that's good. So, but the point is, this is a very big course load. At the same time, perimeter, if you just sit in the bistro, the stream of people you'll see come by is awesome, okay? I found it myself. Okay, we have 35 distinguished research chairs. Okay, these are like the top theoretical physicists in the world. They all visit here. You may go down to the bistro one day, you'll find Stephen Hawking there, you'll find Lenny Susskind, you'll find, last week there was Franz Pretorius, there was, it just goes on and on, okay? You just sit in the bistro, there's an amazing number of visitors here. And as well, you have a pretty exciting faculty here all the time. Talk to them, talk to them. Don't miss the chance. Introduce yourself, tell them what you're interested in. If they're too busy, they'll tell you. But talk to them. Take advantage of the amazing environment you are in. You see, there's something very specific about theoretical physics. It has a definite culture as compared to other fields. It has a culture which is the following, which is that the most junior student can ask a question which completely confounds the most senior professor, okay? And the culture of physics, we know the way physics develops is to be open to these questions, because often they're really good, they're very useful, very stimulating, okay? And often people like you who are new to the field will ask the most interesting questions, okay? So do that. And because theoretical physics is a very abstract field, it's just about ideas. Nobody owns these ideas. Okay, there's no lab which somebody can say, that's my lab. Okay, Maxwell's equations, it's not owned by anybody. Okay, they can be yours as much as anyone else's. And take advantage of that you are. It's a level playing field. And make the most of it. So I hope I won't be in trouble with John for saying this, but if you start pursuing your own agenda here, your own ideas, your own curiosity, and if you find that there's a choice to be made, how much emphasis do I do on getting, all my example sheets right? Or do I get to talk to someone? you know, make sure you choose the right way for you. Okay, make your own choice. I mean, there's no exam in Psi, right? There are interviews. Interviews are fun. Okay. Interviews are fun. They're interactive. Okay. They should be interactive. We deliberately don't have a written exam. And that is to encourage you to pursue your own ideas. And this year, in fact, we introduced a new element, which is that every student is allocated a mentor. And from day one, you get to meet that mentor. And you get to discuss whatever you want to discuss. So we want you to feel you can take the initiative. And that's what you're here to do. This year should be, for all of you, should be a year of discovery of yourselves. You need to discover what you're interested in, what your capabilities are, what really grabs you. Do you want to do theoretical physics anyway? Okay, you can choose an easier life. Okay, there are many easier careers than theoretical physics. And this year is your chance to decide, explore, think about alternatives. And again, take your time. You know, you have a year. Use it well, take your time. Make sure that whichever direction you choose subsequently is something you're really, really interested in, you really want to do. So that's enough from me. I always talk too much. I do apologize. I want to advertise my book. So I was kind of compelled to write this book last year, not of my own volition, but I was asked to give some lectures on the radio. They're called The Universe Within. And that gives you some sense of where I'm coming from, that I feel it's kind of miraculous, this capacity we have to understand the universe. And for me, preparing these lectures and sort of thinking about the history of our field, going back to ancient Greece and all the successes people had and how, in many ways, this was the driver of progress in human society. Thinking about that was actually very inspiring to me and helped me in my physics to focus on the most fundamental questions. Because I view physics, the fact we can do it is such a privilege that it's up to us to live up to that privilege. It's up to us to make the most of our capacity and to answer the real questions. Okay, what happened at the Big Bang? What does the quantum world mean? And what will it mean? So you're in an amazing place. You're in Quantum Valley. Have you heard of Quantum Valley? Okay. I want to, at the risk of talking too much again, what is perimeter? Okay, so perimeter, we have three areas which I would say are huge opportunities here. Okay. One is quantum fields. You know, quantum fields, what are they? They're like electromagnetic fields, but quantized. The Higgs field, it's another field. So quantum fields are the foundation of all of our knowledge of the universe at the most fundamental level. And you happen to be in the place at Perimeter which probably has the leading young group in quantum field theory globally. Okay, these, our faculty are rewriting the rules of quantum field theory. Making very foundational discoveries about how to manipulate and make sense of quantum fields. So we have very strong work in quantum fields. Then, at the other end of the scale, we're interested in gravity, strong gravity. That's the most exciting stuff. Okay, this gravity is not, it's pretty well understood by Newton, okay? But strong gravity is something else. Strong gravity is where inside black holes there are singularities and space and time get completely twisted up. And I'm very lucky I'm going to be teaching that subject to you in a few weeks about gravity. But we actually know that's not the theory. That's not the right theory. This theory is incompatible with quantum mechanics. And so Einstein's theory of gravity needs to be reformulated. And so quantum gravity is a big theme here. Quantum gravity, relevant, it's relevant to the Big Bang. What happened, what really happened at the Big Bang, at the singularity? How do you make sense of that? Using, you have to use quantum, some kind of quantum theory of gravity. Many, many approaches, some of them making very rapid progress at the moment. And then in the middle, there's quantum matter. Okay, so quantum matter is, you know, just matter. But we don't really understand matter. Okay, we know it's made out of atoms and electrons and so on. But the standard picture of matter that many of you learned in condensed matter physics courses, we know that picture's wrong. Okay. That matter has much more complicated properties than just being a bunch of atoms exchanging electrons. It's a good picture, but it's very incomplete. Because in quantum theory, there is entanglement. The quantum state of the matter can be entangled in very, very complex ways, which allow it to have totally different properties. So just in the last decade, people have been discovering new types, new phases of matter, which exhibit these entanglement properties and give very weird outcomes, like fractional electric charges. We always thought that charge comes in integer multiples of the electron charge. Okay, not true. In quantum matter, you discover objects that carry fractional charges or obey all kinds of other weird properties. And so we have a very active effort in quantum matter here. And that turns out to be closely connected to quantum information. How do you describe quantum states in general? And of course, quantum information theory is connected to quantum computers. And we believe that we're on the threshold of a new era, technologically, where quantum computers will be feasible. Just in the last 5 years, I've noticed a huge change in this area. 5 years ago, when I came to Perimeter, the chances of a quantum computer looked pretty small. Within the last 2 years, people have begun to talk very optimistically about seeing something like a quantum computer in the next 2 to 3 years. Many different approaches. So that's something about to happen. We're beginning to see the possibility of building a quantum computer, quantum sensors, quantum communicators, which will take our existence, our experience, to a whole new level. We won't be thinking about the world classically, because that's not the way it works. Okay, the world is much more interesting than our classical picture of it. And so you're in the middle of this. We call it Quantum Valley, this area, this region, just like Silicon Valley in California. So that's thought of as the hub of global technology, right? Well, we're looking to the future. And silicon is not the future. The future is quantum. And yesterday I was in Kitchener at the Blues Festival, okay? And I bought a bag which has the Quantum Valley written on it. Okay, so the whole community here is excited about this. So we have the Institute for Quantum Computing, we have the Quantum Nano Center, we have Quantum Valley Investments. That's a venture capital company to support new tech startups using quantum technologies. And Perimeter's all a part of this. In fact, Perimeter was the kind of seed of all these different things. So for those of you who discover that your real interest is in experiment and you want to see something real, you're not satisfied with describing something, you know, like the Big Bang or superstrings or something like that, you want to see an actual object, then that may be for you. Many Psi students have gone to work on experiment at IQC and other things. So this is another aspect of this community which you will learn more about. So I'd like to shut up now, and but maybe take a couple of questions if you have any questions. And and of course, let me also say that you're always welcome to catch me. My door is always open, my office. You may find it hard to catch me because I move quite fast, but don't let that discourage you. Okay, I'm always open to. And one of the very unique things about Perimeter is we have this flexibility. Okay, so each of us, everybody who works here, should be thinking, how do we improve this place? Okay, it's pretty good already, but how do we make it even better? And so your ideas and your, you know, are extremely valuable, extremely welcome. Every time you come into Perimeter, you should have the feeling, this is my place. I can contribute to it. If I have a good idea, I can change it. We're extremely open to suggestions. Okay, so let me encourage you all to really feel this is your home. This is the place that hopefully your life will have a huge impact on your life. Okay, from now on, you will see yourselves as part of Perimeter. And part of fulfilling this incredible opportunity we have here. So, yeah, let me take a couple of questions. You have to ask questions. Being silent is not an option. Do you have a question? Yes, I believe so. You have copies. Yeah. So, yeah, I encourage you. It's light reading, okay? But for me, it was kind of a revelation to just look back at the history and try to make sense of it and see how it pieced together. You know, physicists are incredibly bad at understanding the significance of their own field. We're hopeless at it, hopeless, okay? We never learn about the history, we never learn about the impact of physics on society, you know, we're just so tangled up in these little equations, we've got to solve them, put it on a computer, you know. We don't think about what it means. And this is divergence between physicists and society has gotten worse. Okay, Waterloo is one of the very few places in the world where it is different. We have these amazing public lectures, right, in the high school. 650 people come every month to our public lecture. The tickets sell out within 5 minutes. The tickets go online, and it's free, but you have to sign up, and they sell out in 5 minutes. Why is that? Okay, you will not find that anywhere in the world. The reason is because a whole community in this town believes in what we're doing. And so it's a very, very unusual place. And you'll find if you go to King Street and you say, oh, I work at Perimeter, everybody's going to say, when's Stephen Hawking coming next? Okay. So what discoveries have you made? Okay, it's good. It's fun. Yeah.
So I want to know your opinion. Like, is smaller or theories that of your preference
that
you think is going to solve, for example, the cosmological constant problem?
They're all wrong. No. Seriously, I think string theory is the most sophisticated of all of them. It has probably more real achievements mathematically. It has some spectacular mathematical outcomes. Not really entirely due to string theory, but for example, holography, the way of describing quantum gravity using a quantum field theory on the boundary of space-time. This is very profound, very powerful new idea. It's only 10 years old. I think it's extremely promising, but it's got a long way to go to connect with reality. I think of string theory, holography, and all of these as mathematical explorations. Okay, they're fun, they're interesting, they may give insight, very important insight, but none of them is yet the answer. Okay, that's clear. Okay, so why do I say it's clear? The standard model is a very, very impressive achievement. I mean, the standard model, and by the way, students like you usually say, oh, I don't want to do the standard model, that's standard. Okay. I want to do, you know, loop quantum gravity or understand the wave function of the universe and all that. I think the lesson of the last three decades is that we tried all of those super ambitious ideas like string theory probably too hastily. You know, people thought, this is the answer, and proclaimed it as the answer before really understanding it and before understanding its limitations. One of the most interesting articles I saw recently on the newsletter of the Simons Foundation was an interview with David Gross. He's one of the developers of string theory, invented the heterotic string. And he said, in a moment of candor, he said, well, string theory has turned out to be not as revolutionary as we expected. It's just another quantum field theory. And so I think, you know, if you enter a field like string theory, which is very mathematical, it's great to do, but you should be aware that you're really just doing a mathematical exploration. What we need in physics is new concepts. One which I think might be relevant is the concept of scale invariance. You see, Maxwell's theory of electromagnetism, it led to relativity, right? Because there was a speed of light predicted. And this was in contradiction with classical mechanics. You can't have a definite speed in classical. No object has a fixed speed. But it had another property, which is scale invariance. That in Maxwell's theory, whether a wave is, a gamma ray, has wavelengths, you know, smaller than an atomic nucleus, or whether the wave is the largest radio wave you can imagine, right? Thousands of kilometers wavelength. They're described by the same equation. Okay, in many ways, they're the same thing. A wave is a wave, and the equation doesn't care about the wavelength. And so that's a property of scale invariance. Maxwell's theory has a property of classical scale invariance. It just doesn't know about the scale. Okay, it doesn't measure things in meters or seconds or whatever. There's no unit in Maxwell's theory. So I view that as a very profound clue. And it turns out that the standard model of physics is almost scale invariance. Okay, there are a couple of parameters that break the scale invariance. One is the mass of the Higgs field. Okay, that's a definite mass, and you have to just input that. But we know we don't really understand that number, because there's a mass of a Higgs field, which is about 120 GeV. Then there's a Planck mass, which characterizes gravity, that is 10 to the power 17 times bigger. And gravity also introduces a scale, the Planck mass. Okay, and then there's a third scale, which is the vacuum energy. Okay, so you have the Planck mass, you have the weak mass, which is 10 to the minus 17 times as big, and then you have the vacuum energy mass, which is about 10 to the minus 30 times as big. Apart from those masses, physics looks scale invariant. Now, what we have to understand is, how did the scale invariance get broken, and how did it introduce these masses? Okay, so I think this is... I think the fact that physics is nearly scale invariance, but the scale invariant... Well, the other thing is, you know, the Planck satellite mapped the sky. And what did they see? What is the pattern coming out of the Big Bang? Well, what do you know? It's scale invariant. That's the fundamental characterization of the pattern. If you look at on a scale of 1/100 of a degree, or 10 degrees, or 100 degrees, you'll find the same pattern. It's scale invariant. That's a very profound clue that whatever happened at the Big Bang was scale invariant. Okay, so for these reasons and many other reasons, it seems to me that the next big principle in physics could be scale invariance. And then we don't really know how to implement it technically. We don't know how to build a theory which is fundamentally scale invariant, but then itself introduces these mass scales. They break scale invariance. And so one of your courses will be on conformal field theory. Okay, conformal field theory is scale invariant field theory. That's what it means. We don't really know how that conformal invariance gets broken in nature. But what we do know is that the most mathematically consistent, complete quantum field theories are the conformally invariant ones. Okay, the scale invariant ones. You may hear of n equals 4 supersymmetry. Okay, you saw in the cafe Pedro Vieira was sitting with his computer. He's calculating n equals 4 supersymmetric. He's one of the leading researchers in the world who are close to solving that theory. That's why he's working so hard. Okay? Well, that theory is completely scale invariant. Okay? And that's why we believe it's so consistent. So to me, the next step will probably, the next important step will be to understand how do we incorporate scale invariance into physics at a fundamental level? So 1 meter, it's not fundamental. Okay, in the fundamental description of the world, there should be no meters or seconds. There's no scale. Okay, and then how does the scale emerge in physics? So that's my suggestion. There are many other suggestions. One of the most exciting is coming from condensed matter, surprisingly. So this theory of quantum matter, you know, we have Xiaogang Wen here, who's one of the leading conceptual developers of describing these entangled quantum states. And one of the very exciting things that happened just over the last year, well, actually many developments before that, but over the last year it's become more and more clear, you can get, even if you start of a system with qubits, right? A qubit is the simplest quantum thing you can have, just a 1 or a 0, but quantum version. So a qubit is the most elementary thing we know of in quantum mechanics. Now, if you start with qubits, out of these qubits, you can find particles. You can find gauge particles like electromagnetism. You can find fermions like the electron out of systems consisting of large numbers of qubits. This is literally quantum information leading to fundamental particles. And so people in that field are very excited that actually this may be the way to understand the standard model, right? This may be the way to understand why are there 3 generations of particles, electron, muon, tau, why are there 3? Maybe the explanation lies in quantum information. And there's some very concrete ideas now about how that would happen. There are lots of problems with the idea. We only know how to handle these qubits on a discrete lattice. And space-time is not discrete. Some people believe it is, but I think there's no evidence for that at all. The world isn't a crystal, as far as we know. But the only way people know how to get particles out of quantum information is in crystalline-type systems, discrete lattice systems. And so that seems like a fundamental puzzle and problem. But again, this is a very exciting and fundamental approach, which you will find being explored here. But if you wanted to work on this, you know, learn the standard model. You have to know it inside and out. That's the real physics, okay? Be careful to distinguish real physics from speculation. Most of what we do in this institute is speculation. 99.999% of what we do here is wrong. The only problem is we don't know which 99.99%. Okay, so, but yeah, that's what makes it all fun. Any other questions? Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, so now I'd like to move on to a number of, I mean, Neil's sort of given you the big picture, and I'm going to go through some of the practical details and things that you may have been wondering about. So let's see. Okay, so here's an outline of what I'd like to do. I'm going to, well, I guess it's going to be done rather quickly. And Tibra, I think maybe we should tell people who are coming later that we're what? Say 15 minutes behind?
Yeah, if you can.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Okay. So what I'd like to do is a little bit of introduction to Psi, a short discussion of the Psi philosophy. Neil's already touched on this, and the culture. Something about the schedule for the year. Talk about evaluation. And hopefully there'll still be some time for questions at the end, although you can interrupt if you want to ask questions. So let me start by some introductions. I'd like to introduce the Psi Fellows, who will be the people that you'll come into close contact with throughout the entire year, who will guide you through the program. Let's start with Aggie Branchuk, who's here, who's actually our newest fellow. Aggie is from Australia. She received her PhD from the University of Queensland in quantum optics and was a postdoc at the University of Toronto, both in physics and chemistry. Anna Kostiki, who's over there, is from Greece. She received her PhD from King's College London in particle physics and cosmology. Dan Wongs, Dan, is right here. Dan is from the US. His PhD is from Cornell in string theory, quantum field theory, particle physics, and cosmology. David Kubiznak is over there. David is from the Czech Republic. He received his PhD from the University of Alberta in black hole physics and was a postdoc at Cambridge University before coming to Psi. Dennis Dalidovich is there. His PhD is from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in condensed matter. And he's been a postdoc at the Magnet Lab in Tallahassee at McMaster University and at Simon Fraser University near Vancouver. The other postdoc, Tibra, will introduce himself later. So there's not too much need to introduce Debbie Gunther and Diana Goncalves, who I think everyone here has probably had the most interactions, or with many interactions with already, and you will continue to do that. So during the day, you'll meet others, Joy Montgomery from IT, Don Bombay, who's your librarian, Patty Butler from People and Culture, Colin Hunter, who's involved in publications, and Lisa Lambert, and definitely not least, Dan Lynch from the Bistro. And there's many other people that you'll meet as time goes on. Briefly speaking, the purpose of Psi is to take you from students, which all of you were and are, to research in as quick and efficient way as we can do it. Our method involves lots of courses, so you may think, oh, well, this is just like being students. It also involves some research. There's the essay, which you'll be working on through the year and mainly at the end of the year. And the other thing that helps you make this transition to physics researchers is interactions with other physicists. Neil mentioned this, but I'd just like to emphasize that you have the opportunity to interact with many different physicists and different kinds of physicists. I mean, one of the most important opportunities is to interact with each other and also with the Sci Fellows, and there will be lecturers coming through during the year, some from inside Perimeter, some from outside. There's a whole group of PhD students here at Perimeter, many of whom are Sci grads. And so I think the group of PhD students has now grown to be larger than any particular Sci class. So, I mean, these are people who've gone before you, and I think you'll find it useful getting to know them. Perimeter has a large group of postdocs, and postdocs are actually in an ideal position to interact with graduate students. They're not too far away from you in age, but they're conducting independent research that's full-time on their own. They can be extremely useful. I would encourage you to get to know the postdocs. Then, of course, there are many faculty at Perimeter. Some of the faculty are resident here full-time. There's another group of faculty who are called associate faculty who work at a university, either nearby, sometimes far away, and they are also employees of the Perimeter Institute. So you'll see people, Cliff Burgess, for instance, at Sungsik Lee and Itai Yavin are all at McMaster, but they're here at least a couple days a week. So these are also useful resources for you. Perimeter has a large number of visitors, and one particular group of visitors that I'd encourage you to get to know are the so-called distinguished visiting research chairs. I think Neil mentioned this. If you go onto the Perimeter website and look at the list of these DVRCs, you'll find that it's a stellar group of people. They're not here all the time. They tend to come for a week or two. For instance, Bill Unruh's here now, I think, for another couple of weeks. They're very good people to get to know. And then, of course, Perimeter has many conferences, and so that a lot more people will be coming through. So interactions with other physicists is an extremely useful thing to do. So next, I'd like to talk briefly about the philosophy of PSI. And I really would like to emphasize the way that we view this. I mean, in particular, we do not think of Psi as a competition or a competitive environment. It's not a race to the finish line. And we really discourage the idea that there will be winners and losers in this program. We strongly encourage cooperation within the Psi class. We strongly encourage you to work together in learning about problems, in figuring out problems. You will have homeworks, and you will have work that you submit. And when you do that, we want everything that you submit to represent your own understanding of the subject, okay? And if other people have helped you, which we hope that they have, you can give credit where credit is due. So that's the one thing which is important, that you report what you know and what you understand. But other than that, as I say, we encourage you to help each other. Some of you come with more experience, some with less. Some of you will at times have particular insights which you can share with others. If you already know some of the things that we're teaching you, then try helping others learn it, because there is an intimate connection between teaching and learning. And you'll discover, if you haven't already, that it's really only when you are able to teach something effectively that you've achieved a reasonable understanding of it. So please help each other. We understand, so we will emphasize from often group activities. We understand that there is a balance in theoretical physics between individual thought, just sitting down and trying to figure something out, and working together with a group. And these are both important. Sometimes you just have to sit and think. Other times you can get a lot of inspiration from discussing problems with other people. The other thing that I would like to emphasize is communication. We're hoping that you come out of this experience with much more highly developed skills in communication than you've come into it with. In particular, because we are an international school, many of you will not have had English as your first language. And so this is a great opportunity to get your English language communication skills up to a very high level. Some people, we actually offer training in English as a second language. There are people at Renison College who come and work with Psi students, and some people are required to take it. Other people will perhaps take advantage of the opportunity, even if it's not required by the university, to improve your skills. And the beautiful thing about the people who teach ESL at the university is that they, if you're struggling to communicate in English, they can actually teach you strategies that you can use to make yourself understood more easily. I mean, it's not just learning the words and the grammar. There's a lot more to it, and these people are experts. For those of you who are native English speakers, it's still practicing communication is extremely valuable. Practicing giving presentations is useful. Actually, the Psi students have had something called the Simonar, which is an opportunity both to invite people to give talks to the group and also for you, for Psi students, to give presentations on subjects that they want to talk about. And similar types of journal club activities can take place within the different research groups at Perimeter. So these are all things that can help you enhance your communication skills. Next, I'd like to say quickly a few things about the culture of Psi and of Perimeter. Neil touched on some aspects of this. In particular, Perimeter is a nice place. I think everyone who's been here for more than a few minutes has come to realize that. You're very well taken care of. In fact, some people could even think, you may even yourself feel that you are being spoiled. And so it's important to recognize that perception. And it's fine. We do spoil you. We try to take care of everything. And it's a great environment to work. In doing this, we think of this as one side of a social contract, which is that we at Perimeter and Psi take care of all of your needs. You're fed, you're housed in nice places, you have great places to work. And then your side of the contract is simply to work very hard and pay close attention to your physics and to the things that we're trying to do. Okay, so that's if you like, the bargain. Your behavior matters. One thing that I would like to say about perimeter, all of you, or most of you, come from universities, and you're, of course, registered in a university program. Perimeter itself is not a university. It's not a degree-granting institution. And actually, there's a lot of people working here who are not involved in particular in our program. In many ways, there's a large administrative staff, for instance. In many ways, Perimeter is a workplace rather than a university. And there's a real difference in the culture of the workplace and the culture of a university, of a, say, a student union or something like that. And I think it's important. I'm telling you this now because you may have never thought about this, but the atmosphere, the environment here is closer to a workplace environment, and the expectations in terms of behavior and dress conduct are, again, more like a workplace environment. And I think maybe when you hear from Patty Butler, she'll explain a little bit more of what this means. But it's something that you should be aware of. Also, we place a high importance on treating each other well and on treating the people who are helping you learn well. So in particular, it's important to be friendly and respectful with the fellows, of course, because you're together all the time. And also the lecturers. Many of our lecturers come from other places around the world. They come here, it's almost a favor that they're doing us. We want them to have a good experience. And so it is actually very important for PSI as an institution that the lecturers are well treated and have a good experience while they're here. We want them to come back. I think Neil mentioned this, that you have the opportunity to get to know people. It's not just the physicists. I mean, as I said, there's a lot of people who work here in the institute and work for you. I mean, there's staff, particularly important, are staff in the bistro. These people will be feeding you three times a day. There are many very interesting people there. You should get to know them. They will get to know you. They'll get to know your names. I think you'll enjoy interacting with them. There's lots of administrative staff in the institute and outreach, communications people, as you'll see. When you work here at night, there's security staff, there's cleaners. Be friendly to all these people, get to know them by name, and you'll have, it will benefit everyone, including all of you. So do that. And it's very important to respect each other. You are an extremely diverse group in a multitude of coordinates. Okay, you will be living and working in very close quarters. You can, in principle, sometimes drive each other crazy. But remember that and don't go crazy. Just treat each other well. Recognize the fact that people have problems. Things aren't always going smoothly. People get excited about things and just cut each other a lot of slack and try to make it an enjoyable time for all of you.
And then finally, you will have many opportunities to sort of give back for the good things that you'll find here. You'll have the opportunity to support the Perimeter Institute. There's lots of opportunities in giving tours. So we have lots of visitors at the Institute, and you people know your way around. So you can be useful with outside groups. You can be useful with outreach. Some of you who enjoy writing will find that you'll have opportunities. Perimeter relies on donations that on which basically it's been built. And sometimes there will be donors here and they will want to see Psi students. Actually, there are some very nice donors who donate money to help support the Psi program. And so these are important people for us. Okay. So one thing I want to emphasize that's new this year is the mentoring system. So we have, for the first time, assigned mentors to each of you. Now, each of you has been assigned to one of the six Psi fellows, so they'll have maybe five students who they have a specific responsibility for mentoring. And I'm not sure if you all know who that is, but you will very soon. Each of you has been assigned to a faculty member, to a faculty mentor, okay? So that person is there. You should seek them out and talk to them about what you're interested in, any questions that you have about the Institute or about science. Seek out your mentors. They know who you are. Hopefully by now all of you know who they are. So I'm, for instance, mentoring the student who's not here, Wenwei Ho, who's from Princeton, but he's now stuck in Singapore waiting for his study permit. I've been in touch with him. I know what he's interested in. I know that I'm not actually an expert in the things that that he would like to do, but I can put him together with other people who can help him out and help him learn about things that he's interested in. So you should think about how you can make good use of your mentor. You should get to know them. One of the reasons why we have mentors is because we found in the past that the Perimeter faculty did not get to know the Psi students until rather late in the year. And we think it's advantageous if they get to know you early in the year. So that means that I encourage you to take that initiative and go and talk to the people, the person who's been assigned to you. Okay, so now let's move on. I'd like to talk about the schedule, which has these parts, the front end, which is essentially the next 4 weeks, the core review and exploration courses, and then the essay. Okay, that's the schedule. This is an updated timetable. I don't know how well you can all see it. But the blue at the top is the next 4 weeks, which is filled in only a very sketchy way. And then there's the core courses in yellow, six courses that all of you will take. Now, if you look closely at this, you'll see that after every 3 weeks of lectures, there is 1 week of review and interview. And maybe I'll come back to that. They're part of the reason why there aren't as many courses as Neil thought there were. Okay, and then after Christmas, there are these review courses, which you'll choose from, and then following the March break, there are the exploration courses. Let me just talk briefly about the front end. It consists of math and physics modules and also introductions to things that are specific to Psi and Perimeter here. So The schedule for this is available on a Google Calendar, which is shared with all of you under your perimeter ID. And I should also mention at this point that there is a PSI wiki, which has information and which will continually be, information will be added about PSI courses. So these math and physics modules are intended, well, they're intended for a number of purposes, okay? The math modules are sort of reviews of mathematical methods, which we feel that it's essential that you know and understand. Now, some of those may be things that you already know and understand, in which case we don't want to bore you to death. So actually, there's going to be an opportunity to test out of these things, just to write a little test to confirm whether or not you know all that stuff or you don't, okay? And if you find that you do, then there are other things you can do with your time. If you find that, oh yeah, you didn't quite remember all of that, or you weren't really, some things that you hadn't seen, then you should definitely do those modules. You might also want to do them just because you're interested in the subject and you want to see how it's explained by the people who are presenting them. There's going to be some things on computation, and also Freddy Cachazzo is going to give a little sequence on quantum field theory, which I suspect everyone will want to participate in. So you'll hear more about how this will work later in the week. So moving on, I'd like to say something about, people are always interested in how are we evaluated. You all know that we have no tests, no exams, and that everything is pass-fail in PSI. We do evaluation. There are a number of purposes for the evaluation that we do. One is that we have the responsibility of ensuring that you've met the requirements of the University of Waterloo in order to earn your degree as coursework master students. So we have to have criteria for what we call pass and what we call fail. And so that's one purpose of the evaluation. Another purpose has to do with grad school recommendations. People frequently ask for recommendations to grad school, and it's important that we have some idea of how you're doing. People frequently, in fact, we encourage this, to decide to do their PhD with some perimeter faculty members, say as PhD students at the University of Waterloo, but studying here. Those prospective PhD supervisors are very interested in how you're doing in the program, so we try to be able to tell them. Okay, so that's another purpose. I should say, by the way, with respect to grad school recommendations, in the past, I've written hundreds of these, part of the purpose of having you get to know more faculty is that you have more people who are prospective letter writers for you. It all depends on how well you get to know mentors and other faculty members. And the third purpose of the evaluation is to provide you with feedback on how you're doing, and you'll see how that works. So our methods of evaluation are the homework. In each of the courses, there's either two or three homework assignments that you will need to submit. When you submit these homework assignments, they'll be reviewed by the fellows and the TAs. If there's, who may actually ask you questions about your homework assignment just to see whether they're comfortable that you understand what you did, or if they're not happy with the work or if they're not satisfied with it, they may ask you to go back and do more, improve it. So basically, you'll pass the course, so they'll decide that you'll pass the course when they're satisfied that you've understood the material. And part of that is in, that these homeworks should be a very high quality a presentation of the solutions of problems that's sort of fitting the level that you're working at. There are also interactions in classes and tutorials, discussions, contributions to the tutorials, questions that you ask. We would like to have, we never have you give enough presentations. Of course, in the essay, you're giving a presentation. We like to schedule something before the Christmas break. We'll see how that goes. Very important in the evaluation or this is this review and interviews. So for the core courses, for the six core courses that take place over the next few months, at the end of every course, there's a week, you will be given a list of topics to review that represent the important content of the course. And then each of you will meet with two of the fellows, and they'll ask you questions, and you'll explain things, and they'll see if you understand the basic parts of the course. Again, if they're not satisfied or if they're not happy, they may ask you to go back and learn a little bit more and come back. But basically, the idea is to make sure that you're at the level that you've absorbed the material of the course. So I'd say between the homeworks and the reviews and interviews, that's what determines when you pass. Okay? And finally, the essays and the essay defenses. So this is a very important component of the program. And you will find a supervisor who could be a perimeter faculty member or some other faculty member, or maybe a postdoc with the help of a faculty member, and select a topic for your essay. And then you can start doing that anytime. In fact, it's never too early, really, to start thinking about that and working on identifying a supervisor and a project. There comes a time when courses end, towards the end of April, and then you'll have full time to work on your research and your essay. But actually, you really want to get started before that. So I would encourage you to get going early and think about what you're going to do. Now, the essay defenses, so what happens is that you have until the end of May to write your essay. We ask you to submit it about the last day of May or the first day of June, something like that. And then there's a period of a week or two where you will be preparing your presentation, and the external examiners, of which there are three, plus maybe one of the fellows, will be reading your essay. And then we get to a point where we have the essay defenses, and basically every student gets an hour. This is a public defense, you can all come. What the hour means is that you have 20 minutes to present what you've done. There's about 20 minutes for people to ask you questions, and then there's another 20 minutes for break and for the examiners to discuss how you did, okay? And so there's a marathon sequence of essay defenses. So these are our methods of evaluation. Oh, yes. So you know that it's all pass-fail. The requirements for your degree are basically that you pass all of the core courses, and then there's a minimum requirement on the reviews and the exploration courses, there's a minimum of 4 review courses that you have to pass and 2 exploration courses that you have to pass. Many people take more than that, but those are the minimum requirements for the degree and for the PSY diploma that you will get. Plus, of course, the essay. Okay, so those are the requirements for earning your PSY degree. Okay, and that takes me to the end. So we can have questions now, because I did go through it rather quickly. Let me just ask Tibber, how are we doing on?
We have about more than half an hour.
Okay, so we're back on schedule.
Yeah, if you don't take a long break.
Yeah, okay, but we will take a little break in the, yeah. Okay, so like I said, I've gone through this pretty quickly, but if you may have questions about the some of the things I've said. Yes, Emma. Oh yeah. So after we do a few other things, there's people coming to talk to you about different aspects of science of perimeter, and one of them is the I guess it's Colin Hunter from the publications group that's run by Natasha Waxman, who's not here today. And so, you know, there is this Inside the Perimeter, is that it? Or there is that publication where articles are frequently written by PSY students. And then I think they have other opportunities for writing, for the website, for special events. And so it's actually quite a good group to connect with if you like to write. Else. Other questions? Okay. It did go by fast, I'm sure. But it is all recorded, actually. So, so if you wonder about what I said, you can go and find it. Okay, so I think then we're at that point where I'll turn things over to Tibra.